65,498 square miles. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get to it. This is Spanning the State. Here's your host, Kristen Bry.
Hello, hello. Happy Election Day. I got up first thing this morning. I was number 91 in my ward, voted in person, thanked my poll workers. One of my favorite things to do. So if you voted today, I would love to see a picture of your I voted sticker. 855-616-1620, Citing Unlimited, WTMJ, talk and text line. But yes, we were not here yesterday. And so a lot has happened in the Wisconsin scene since our show on Friday. As you probably remember, in the wee hours of Friday morning, the weekend before today's election, Elon Musk took to Twitter to announce, or X, to announce that he was going to not only be in Wisconsin speaking, but he was going to deliver to Wisconsin voters $1 million each, specifically rewarding those who had already voted. The problem there, as we talked to Bernie Goddard, who is one of who is a elections lawyer in Wisconsin, that that's literally election bribery, and in Wisconsin that is illegal. And so what was funny was that apparently the AI chatbot on X, which is called Grok, had also flagged the activity on Musk's post as potentially illegal. I think the quote was, though aimed at boosting participation, this could be seen as election bribery. And so Elon deleted that that post and then reposted a toned down version saying that the $1 million checks were now appreciation for signing a petition against activist judges, and that the people would serve as the winners would serve as spokespeople for the petition in opposition of activist judges. Meanwhile, Attorney General Josh Call filed a lawsuit against Musk in the attempt to stop the Sunday event. Hilariously, in CCAP, the case was assigned to Susan Crawford's court. So by Friday afternoon, or was it Saturday morning? Now I can't even remember. She had to recuse herself for obvious reason. Venues change. Ultimately, the appellate court allowed Musk's giveaway to proceed. It was then an emergency appeal to the Supreme Court, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, who unanimously voted to reject the appeal as well. And I think the confusing thing about that was they did not rule on the legality of what Musk was doing. It was basically, as I understand it, a procedural issue of how Call filed the lawsuit, and so he didn't have standing to file it. So Musk's event went forward, and he indeed did give away two $1 million checks Sunday night, one of whom is a young man who is the chairman of the Wisconsin College Republicans, Nicholas Jacobs, and he studies at River Falls. And the other recipient is Ekaterina Disler, who seems like she does not work in politics and is a graphic designer. And here we are. I don't know what happens now. We are obviously, polls will close at 8 p.m. tonight. This will go down as the record-breaking, almost doubling what we spent 2 years ago. I don't know if charges can be filed after the fact for what Musk did as far as giving those checks away, and if there's actually standing there. And so I have invited Bernie Goddard to come back and tell us what happens now, because we talked to her on Friday and she broke down the law as far as what we knew at that point Friday morning. But now that we are past all of that chaos that happened over the weekend and into yesterday, and now are on Election Day, she is going to join us when we come back to talk about what happens from here, maybe break down a little bit more of why the courts rejected Call's case in the first place. So stay with us on Spanning the State. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bry, and one of the many things I have always said since starting to talk about Wisconsin politics after living on either coast for most of my adult life, and having a lot of friends who think of Wisconsin sometimes as a flyover state. But what I love to remind people is that when it comes to politics in Wisconsin, it is never boring here. And certainly this weekend, starting Friday morning with Elon Musk's tweet saying that he was coming and giving two $1 million checks away, was not a boring weekend. And so what happened since we talked to Brina Goddar on Friday and what is happening going further? She is back. She is a staff attorney with the State Democracy Research Initiative at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Welcome back to the show, Brina.
Hi, good to be back.
So last we spoke to you on Friday, Elon had, you announced on our show that he had deleted his original tweet and posted a reframing of what the giveaway was. And then basically during our show, it was announced that Attorney General Josh Call had filed a lawsuit. So can you explain what the lawsuit was that Call was asking for?
Yes. So Josh Call was asking the court to halt Elon Musk giving away those $2 million payments on Sunday night. And he was doing that arguing that those payments would violate Wisconsin's election bribery statute, even with the changed tweet, because he had already, or the changed post, because he had already sort of explained that it was going to be for voting.
So it was more of like a restraining order to stop the event from happening rather than charging Elon Musk with a crime.
Correct. Yeah, okay. It wasn't criminal charges. It was just a civil case seeking an injunction, trying to get ahead of those payments and having a court stop them.
So I thought it was particularly hilarious and true to form that it was first assigned to Judge Susan Crawford, who had to recuse herself, obviously. But then which judge, who was the first judge to get it and decline to take it?
Yes. So after Judge Crawford recused, and, you know, cases are assigned randomly.
Yes,
so
yes.
A random happenstance. It went to Judge Andrew Voigt in Columbia County. And he actually did not rule on the case.
Okay.
So that's why this ended up going to the appeals court and the Wisconsin Supreme Court, was because the trial court didn't actually decide whether to issue an injunction or not.
And so what, because I think this is where people got confused. And I think when you just read a headline, it looks like he was allowed to go forward because they found nothing wrong, versus kind of the legal, what I understood is more legal speak as far as the reason why they just didn't hear the case at all. So can you explain what their reasoning was for not even taking the case?
Yeah. So I think the really important thing to note is that no court has said that what he is doing is legal. Like you said, no court has actually reached that issue of whether this is unlawful election bribery. The sort of procedural piece, somewhat simplified, is that the trial court didn't deny or grant the injunction. It just didn't act. And so when Josh Call then went to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, he was asking for sort of an unusual type of intervention by the Court of Appeals, because usually when you're asking, you're appealing a decision, you're appealing something that the trial court actually did. Whereas here, the trial court hadn't actually issued a decision, so there wasn't a decision to appeal from. And so the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, there was sort of a unique way of asking them to intervene, and they kind of concluded that it wasn't their role to do that, given that they didn't have a decision to rule on.
Got it. Okay. So is there something different that Call could have done, or was it just kind of he did it as quickly as he could because of the timing? Or was, I mean, yeah, I guess it was like, this is, did he drop the ball, or was it just like this is the cards as they were laid?
Yeah, it's hard to think of sort of what else he could have done preemptively to try to stop this, especially given the short timeline. You know, this was all happening Friday and the event was Sunday.
Yes, and I'm assuming courts usually don't take cases over the weekend, but I don't know how that works.
Yeah, it's not typical, you know, it's not their typical schedule, and they obviously can and do issue emergency orders like they did over this weekend. But, you know, it's outside the normal realm. And so, you know, it might have been different if a trial court had actually issued a decision on Friday. But since that didn't happen, then it was sort of in this strange procedural space.
So now that the checks have been given out, obviously the election is today, is there a chance, is there any standing for anyone to charge Elon Musk with a crime?
It is possible. So there's a procedure for prosecuting violations of Wisconsin's election bribery law. It would likely involve sort of a complaint with the Wisconsin Elections Commission and eventually a district attorney bringing charges.
Okay. And so it would have to, it knows it's either a district attorney, would it have to be in Brown County since that's where the event was?
Potentially, that would be the most likely location, but there could be reasons why other locations might be available as well.
Got it. Okay. And then the last thing, can you explain what the Hatch Act is and if that plays a role in this, since Elon Musk is ostensibly part of the federal government?
Yes. So basically, because he, and I want to just make sure I'm getting this right, but because he is not, there's some distinction about whether he is acting in his role while he is on duty versus off duty.
Okay.
And so other folks who are, I will say, more knowledgeable in this than I am, have said that because he's sort of a special government employee, it governs sort of while he's on duty and using his official position to influence the outcome. But since he's supposedly acting when he's off duty, he's allowed to engage in political activity that would potentially otherwise be an issue under the Hatch Act, so long as he's not actually actively on government duty while he's doing it.
Because the Hatch Act basically bars any federal employee from partaking in partisan politics, right? In simple terms?
Mm-hmm.
Got it. All right. Well, this has been super, this has been a crazy lead up to this election. So thank you so much for joining us to try to explain some of the stuff that we don't understand for those of us who did not go to law school.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Britta Goddard is a staff attorney with the State Democracy Research Initiative at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Outdoor Living Unlimited News Time is 1:24 on Spanning the State. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bry. And of course, today in Wisconsin, all eyes are on the election. And I was going to talk about this later in the show, but Jim from EconoWalk kindly texted in and reminded me to, or wanted me to bring up the fact that Cory Booker is on hour 18, I think, right now, of his filibuster. The man has been speaking for over half a day, trying to block any legislation that would harm Medicaid. And I am going to talk about it later, but he looks good. I just pulled up the YouTube C-SPAN Live. He's still standing. He looks energetic. I don't know what. This is a man who's a vegan, and I think he also does not partake in any kind of extracurricular activities. I don't even know if he drinks coffee, but he still is standing and going for it. So it's been a while since we've seen a filibuster like this. As far as, was Ted Cruz the last guy to spend hours filibustering something? Rhea doesn't know. Rhea's giving me this. She's like, why are you asking me? but yeah, so I will, at the bottom of the other news, I will check in to see, I can't turn the sound up right now, of what he is talking about. But I do know that about 50,000 people, 49,921 to be exact, are watching the C-SPAN live stream of Cory Booker filibuster this bill. And so I will get up to speed on that and talk more about it later in the show.
But are you able to use a restroom that happens?
I forgot exactly what the rules are. I think there's something to, like, you can tap someone else in. But I think there's also legend as far as people just going to the bathroom on themselves.
Oh, God.
And just keep going for it. I feel like there was also a case of this in Texas, in their state legislature, when one of their, I think it was a state senator, who's a woman, who was trying to filibuster an abortion bill. And it was, I think, over 20 hours that she ended up standing there, too. So it is...
It's impressive.
I don't know if it's something you train for. Like, I can barely stand 10 minutes without being like, I got to sit down, man. Like, but anyways, the other thing I also wanted to quickly touch on, because in the Elon Musk Sunday night event, one of the things that made the rounds on social media, at least it was sent to me a number of times, was the graph he threw up there as far as how many non-citizens have received Social Security numbers. And, you know, it was kind of a dramatic chart. But the thing that I want people to remember is that anyone legally present in the U.S. and authorized to work can legally obtain a Social Security number. So this includes legal permanent residents, international students, work visa holders, U.S. citizens, and those with other legal statuses, such as asylum seekers, can all have a Social Security number. And they've non-citizens have been receiving Social Security numbers since the 1940s. That is not a proof of citizenship, so it's not as dramatic as maybe that chart and the effect was meant to have during that speech. So just wanted to set the record straight. But first, ABC News and local headlines. Hey, it's time for Giving Tuesday, where we introduce you to Wisconsin people and organizations that are advocating for causes and doing good across the state. Now, I think if you've been listening to the show, it's no surprise to hear that we are big fans of dogs on this show. We rescued, my husband and I rescued our dog, Cliff, the 14-year-old Chihuahua, flown in from Texas, still not used to Wisconsin winters, but that's okay. But our featured nonprofit today is Elbert's Dog Lounge, which is based in Whitewater and is a foster-based rescue focused on providing loving homes to seniors, special needs, and hospice dogs. So joining us now is Mandy Lewis, who is the founder of Elbert's Dog Lounge. Welcome to the show, Mandy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Really good. Thank you.
Yeah, great. So I guess let's start. Can you tell me about Elbert?
I can. So I really didn't know anything about senior special needs dogs. I was actually volunteering through another organization who typically takes on younger dogs and puppies, and I was a foster at the time. And this geriatric little dachshund named Elbert ended up on a transport in error, on accident, and he arrived in Wisconsin from Texas also, where my husband carried him around for about 2 hours, and well, they decided what they were going to do, and then the decision came back that they were going to send this poor dog down to Texas, back down to Texas, and I said to my husband, I'm like, they're sending the dog back. He's like, over my dead body. I said, well, we don't know the first thing about senior dogs. He's like, we'll figure it out. This poor thing was, he was geriatric. He had congestive heart failure, had a plethora of health issues, but we decided to take him on as our first senior and hospice dog. And we had him for about 8 months before he suddenly passed away on us. And when he passed away, we were like, we need to do more for dogs like Elbert. And thus we created Elbert's Dog Lounge. And here we are 8 years later, rescuing dogs,
rescuing?
Lots of seniors and special. Yeah.
So I guess, so you can tell me more about how it's grown. Cause it started just in your garage.
Yeah. So it started out, in my 2-car garage. We would put the crates in there and we would actually, we're rescuing dogs from Texas at the time and bring them up and we would kind of bring them into my garage and divvy them out to adopters and to fosters. And suddenly my 2-car garage wasn't big enough anymore. And my house was becoming overflowing with dog storage. So my husband and I built a pole barn on our property, which is now our primary, you know, storage facility. And we've been, with a goal of 50 dogs our first year, we thought, well, that's a great number. If we can help 50 dogs, amazing. We ended up helping well over 120 dogs our first year. And now we're averaging about 300 to 350 dogs a year.
Wow.
We like to keep it kind of smaller because quality of care for these dogs is really, really important to us versus, you know, numbers. For us, it's more important that these dogs get the right care and the right medical attention prior to adoption. So, but we overall, in the last 8 years, we've probably seen about 2,500 dogs go through our program and
wow.
get homes or stay with us through the end of their life if they were hospice.
Because it is one of the things I read. So it's 100% foster based. So it's you guys, but it's also volunteers. And there is no central location where someone can come see like what dogs are available, right?
Correct. Everything is on our website. We have fosters as far north as Wausau area, all the way down to Chicago. And the dogs are, it's important to us that these dogs go into homes where they're able to sleep in warm, cozy beds and get the same love and affection that they would if they were, you know, a member of somebody's family. So it also helps us get to know the dogs really well. So we know all their likes and dislikes and nuances, and that's also better for the dog going forward because then we can share those experiences with potential adopters.
So what have you learned about hospice dogs, older dogs, you know, dogs with special needs? Like, what is unique about caring for this type of dog?
Well, I like them because they're low key. So, I mean,
very different than a puppy.
Right. I'm definitely not, you know, I'm not retirement age, but I'm getting a little older and I have a very, you know, kind of busy lifestyle and I know a lot of other people do. And so it's nice that I can, you know, leave my house when I want and my dogs aren't chewing up, you know, carpeting and they aren't destroying things and they don't have more energy than I can handle. So but I also like that there seems to be a level of gratitude, you know, with these old dogs, that they're just so thankful for the warm, cozy bed and for the good food and nutrition and, you know, just generally feeling well. A lot of them we get have been neglected or in a state of, you know, not getting the best care that they've gotten. So we are able to do things like remove painful masses or painful eyes if they're, you know, bad, you know, not doing well, do things like get their livers feeling better if their enzymes are elevated and dental work done all before they even go into their next home. So we try to set them up for the best success for whatever time that they may have left.
And so what would you recommend as far as people who are thinking about fostering, thinking about adopting, and what is the right prototype for someone who would be a good foster or adoptive parent to one of Albert Dogs Lounge dogs?
Well, we have a variety of dogs, big and small, all types of personalities from, you know, around six, seven years old, all the way up to geriatric. The nice thing is that we are an organization that does a lot of matchmaking. So we matchmake whether you're a foster home or you're an adoptive home. And so we're always trying to get the best information we can from whomever is taking this dog on so that it's a good match for you and your home logistically and for the dog. So. Oh. That's an added benefit of having the foster homes and us getting to know the dogs at such an extensive level is that we can ensure that it's as good as fit. I mean, you know, obviously sometimes things happen and it's not a good fit, but I would say for the most part, we do a really great job of matchmaking and ensuring that everybody's satisfied and it's the right fit for them and right fit for the dog.
So now I'm a sucker on it, whether it's Instagram or TikTok, for when I find like a rescue story on a dog, like different types of rescues like yours, where a dog comes in and there's a story of like there's the videos of them getting washed and brought back to health. Do you guys have social media where you you tell these dog stories?
We do. We have Facebook, we are on TikTok, and we are on Instagram, and we do have many stories that we share out there of these dogs, good and bad. It's important for us to celebrate their successes as well. So.
Awesome. And then what's the website?
It is albertsdoglounge.org.
Perfect.
And all our links to social media are out there, our links to adoptable dogs, ways to donate, ways to apply to foster, and even just volunteer if you're not able to foster. There are other volunteer opportunities.
And all the dogs, right? That's where all they can find all the
and
dogs
all the
are
dogs,
available.
Yes. The wonderful dogs.
Perfect. All right. Well, Mandy Lewis, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Albert's Dog Lounge. She is the founder and president of the board of directors. So check it out. And we'll be back in just a minute.
If you know of a Wisconsin organization you would like highlighted on Giving Tuesday, email us at spanning@wtmj.com. We can always use a little help from our
good music choice, Rhea. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bry, and it is indeed April Fool's Day. It is April 1st. What a hilarious day to have an election on. It is not an April Fool's joke. Please go vote if you have not yet. Polls will be open until 8 p.m. Stay in line. If you don't know where your polling place is, myvote.wi.gov, you can look up there. You can look and see what's in your on your ballot, what you need to bring in case you still need to register, which you can do in person. All of those things. But please get out there and make sure you vote today. But yes, it is April Fool's. Rhea, are you an April Fool's? Are you a prankster?
Not anymore. Maybe back in my day.
Not anymore. You were a prank. Is there a prank that you're proud of?
You know what? Now that I think of it, probably not.
Okay. The only good April Fool's joke I've ever been a part of was my brother likes April Fool's, but some of his are kind of mean. Like this morning, he's at my parents' house right now, and I guess he got my poor mom, because his back's been hurting him.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I don't know. And he started calling out to her from his bedroom, making it sound like he couldn't
get up. That's scary.
And so my poor mom went barreling up the stairs this morning.
Aww.
And then when she got into his room, he started laughing. I was like, that just feels mean. That doesn't feel that creative. But he and I did pull off a creative one once years ago with his girlfriend. Do you remember that terrible movie? Was it Spring Breakers? James Franco was in it. And
the kids. Yeah, like I've never
girls,
seen it. But,
I never actually saw it either. But this was, I don't know, like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And he had texted me separately saying, pretend you've seen this movie and defend it and like explain, you know, give some reason why you like it. So then on a text thread with him and his girlfriend, we did that because she was just appalled by anyone who could like that movie.
Oh, so your mom saw it?
It wasn't my mom. It was my brother's girlfriend at the time. And she was an opinionated person.
Mm-hmm.
And we went for it for a good while as far as me making up all these reasons of how it was an art house film. And she clearly just didn't understand the premise of the movie. And it must have gone over her head and like just gaslighting her and really leaning into it. And she was, I guess, because my brother was sitting next to her as it happened. And I guess she just got, she fell for it. She fell for it hard. And then eventually we're like, I haven't even seen the movie yet.
That's a good one.
That's a heartless one, right? And so that's the only, because I'm not a prankster like that. But of course, in Milwaukee, the biggest pranksters when it comes to April Fool's Day, notoriously, is On Milwaukee, who loves to publish their fake headlines that I've been told they come up with. It's like takes months in advance to come up with the headlines that they're going to, I don't think they really fool anyone anymore because everyone comes to expect it. But as far as the creativity that goes into it. And so, of course, we have one of the originators and the founders of On Milwaukee, Jeff Sherman, of course, no longer works there, but he's now one of our teammates. And so this morning on his show, he talked a little bit about the origin story.
I'll tell you a quick story here. Over the years, one of the co-founders of OnMilwaukee.com, going back years, we decided, hey, it might be a fun opportunity for us to position an upstart digital media company to do our own kind of creative local take on The Onion. So we started doing April Fool's features, you know, totally fun, a bit in your face stories that obviously were not true, but were massively exaggerated through the use of creative photography that we used, you know, AI a little bit, some creative photoshopping, if you will, and other skills to make sure that the photos were really fun and vibrant. Now, this was a multi-month operation, right? We came up with the ideas. We found ways to have a whole lot of fun, maybe poke a little fun at the city we loved through this media vehicle.
So that was Jeff Sherman on The Upswing this morning, talking about some of the origin stories of OnMilwaukee.com's April Fool's headlines. And you can go check it out today on Milwaukee.com. They have all of their headlines on today that they've come up with. But the one that I like, that I feel like they might be onto something, is Potawatomi Sportsbook announces 1.7 mile skywalk linked to American Family Field. And I'm just imagining if it's not only just a skywalk, but it's also the conveyor, but like the airport conveyor belts where you can like speed walk. Cause I feel like that cuts it down at least by half as far as how far it feels like you're walking. But it also makes me feel like, how has Potawatomi never come up with a shuttle to American Family Field? In all these years of being that close, of like park here for free, gamble a little bit, and then we will take you to the field, and then we'll bring you back here after you've had some drinks so you can gamble more. Seems like a huge business missed opportunity.
That's a good idea.
Just saying, I'm giving it away for free. That's all I'm going to end on, and we'll be back in just a minute. Producer Rhea just reminded me of an April Fool's joke that turned into a real product, which was for years Culver's saying Curder Burger. Is that what they call it?
I think it's just a curd burger.
Curd burger. And that was a joke until it wasn't. And I still haven't had one.
Really?
I've been told that they're not worth the hype because it's like, it's too much curd.
It's a lot going on there, but yeah. At least do it once. Like,
they're always sold out by the time I would ever get there. Like, I don't care enough to wait in that line or to wait in line only be told, like, sorry, we're out. If someone brings me one, I'll try it. I'm not against it. I just don't. My time is worth more than that, maybe. All right. Speaking of April Fools, in the next hour, after the top of the hour news, I wrote an article about what I wish was an April Fool's joke, but is not. So I am going to have a little bit of a rant coming up at 2:15-ish, because when we come back, we got to spin around the state on Spanning the State.